Compass Media Networks. This is America's First News, This Weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Help for back pain. I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of your Thanksgiving weekend with us. Here's what's coming up during this program.
There's a new approach from doctors who are going beyond surgery and pain pills to treat the number one cause of chronic pain. We'll explain what they're doing for your aching back.
Will you be applying for a loan in the next few months? If so, find out the most efficient way to clean up your credit score in the shortest amount of time.
On this Thanksgiving weekend, how a 7-year-old boy from New York City is showing his thanks to police officers.
And future professional athletes learn how to manage potential millions while still in college.
The swimmer Misty Franklin was in the process of turning pro and was faced with all of these overwhelming decisions. How do I hire an agent? How can I choose the right agent?
New York Times reporter Karen Kraus on specialized personal finance courses being taught at Cal Berkeley for athletes. She's here in about 25 minutes. Well, with nonstop television images and social media providing a constant stream of updates about violent and traumatic events around the world, especially recently in Paris, how can parents and teachers help children understand what's going on? Lucy Westcott, international correspondent for Newsweek, has been soliciting advice from experts. Lucy, what have you found?
I found something called Le Petit Libé, which is from the French newspaper Liberation. And this is a resource for children that explains specific news events. So they've done one on the refugee crisis in Europe. Oh. They've done one on the climate talks, the upcoming climate talks at the end of the month. And then they had to kind of scramble together one on the Paris attacks very quickly. This resource is much, you know, is honest. Okay. So it's intended for 7 to 12-year-olds. And it explains what the Islamic State is. There's a map. It explains what a terrorist, well, it gives an explanation for terrorists, and it gives an explanation for suicide bombers. And it does say there may be another attack one day.
Mm.
So I spoke to an American child psychologist, and he said that this resource in particular may not be great for American children who are 7 to 12. It may be a bit old for them.
Really? And yeah. Why that? Why did he say that or she say that?
He said that but just basically because I think it went into, according to him, it went into too much detail. There perhaps needs to be a balance for American children that doesn't need to be there for French children, perhaps.
Yes. Because we're babied, or we baby our children, or is
he didn't give too much of an explanation, but he just said, I would give this to middle school age children, this particular resource, as opposed to the, you know, 7, 8, 9-year-olds it's intended for in France.
We're speaking with Lucy Westcott, international reporter at Newsweek. She's got a piece entitled How France is Helping Its Children Cope with the Paris Attacks. You mentioned, too, yeah, in the piece talking about in the explanation in the French publication for the children that it's helpful to be specific with the attack sites, right? Like it was Stade de France and the Bataclan. Why the specifics?
So I spoke to the child psychologist who worked on this particular resource. It was three journalists, a developer, a producer, and Marie-Rose Moreau. She's a child and adolescent psychologist and psychiatrist. She said that, you know, it's better to keep kids in the loop. So letting them know the actual specific names, it lets them know what they are so that they're clear. If you don't tell them those, you know, those specific details, they could think it's something worse. They could think, then, you know, my parents, my teachers aren't telling me something. What could have happened there? It might have been more dangerous. It might have been more violent than it actually was.
Does this seem similar with what, other countries have tried to do as well?
Do you know what? I haven't actually looked at too many other countries. I did look at some U.S. resources today, some kind of child, teenager-centric news sources. So you've got Time for Kids,
right?
Kids Post, and let me think, CNN Student News. None of these three that I just looked at today really went into too much detail. Time for Kids did mention ISIS or the Islamic State. They also mentioned the Bataclan being one of these sites. But in terms of other countries, I'm really not sure. I guess it's up to the discretion of the parents.
Yeah. What else jumped out at you as you were kind of making these phone calls and visits?
Sure. So one of the main things, actually, I was, you know, we've all seen the photos, some terrible photos from November the 13th of people covered in blood, but we've also seen lovely photos of memorials from around the world. I was speaking with Sam Hackworth, an Austin, Texas-based child psychologist, and he said even the photos that people choose for these child-friendly publications can be very tricky. And I'll give you an example. The stuffed animals that are part of many memorials, kids can see those. I mean, we're talking younger kids here rather than maybe 11 or 12-year-olds. But if a 6 or 7-year-old sees there's a stuffed animal, I have stuffed animals, were the attackers targeting children?
Oh.
And were there victims who were children? So that can be kind of tricky. Another one, which is kind of related to Paris, is last week you may have seen the Islamic State magazine. They published a photo of the supposed bomb that downed the Russian jet plane last month. Yes, that included a soda can.
Yep.
Children can see that soda can. According to this child psychologist, they can walk into a store and think, oh, any soda can be a bomb.
Thanks, Lucy. Lucy Westcott, international correspondent for Newsweek. 13 minutes after the hour on This Weekend. What happens to all that leftover food at restaurants each night? Most eateries would love to give it away, but might be unsure of the rules. Here's Mackenzie Lunsford, food writer at the Citizen Times in Asheville, North Carolina. Mackenzie, what's up here?
Well, I found out that in this is also something that comes from my background as a chef before a food writer. It's sort of common knowledge in restaurants, and I'd say common knowledge in air quotes, that you cannot donate food that's already been prepared, even if you keep it very safe, to local shelters. And I found out that Good Samaritan laws that have been in place since about the mid-90s, since the Clinton administration, actually protect people who want to donate food as long as they're, of course, you know, taking as good care of it as they can.
Yeah. Okay. So the Good Samaritan law does what? Say it protects you. Basically, you donate food and somebody gets sick, they can't come back and sue you?
That's right. I mean, as long as you've taken all the necessary precautions, I mean, of course you have to follow food safety standards. You have to cool it down within a certain amount of time. But what this bill is specifically is the Bill Emerson Good Samaritan Food Donation Act. And it is a federal law that protects good faith donors from civil and criminal liability.
Wow. All right.
Just in case the product causes harm to its recipient later.
Gotcha. All right. So say just in your neck of the woods in Asheville, North Carolina, then any estimate on how much food actually goes to waste on a daily or perhaps weekly basis?
Right. Well, I can tell you a couple of things. I can tell you that on a global level, we do waste a third of our food supply, which is obviously very significant. I know of a local business here that actually collects food for composting from area restaurants, and not even all of the area restaurants, and they pick up 20 to 30 tons a week.
Wow.
Which obviously is significant. So that's a lot of waste going into the landfill.
We're speaking with Mackenzie Lunsford. She's a food writer at the Asheville Citizen Times. Her piece is called Despite Law, Restaurants Still Don't Donate Food. This composted food, then, is it prepared food or it's a combination of food that was prepared and, say, never used or something?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, some of it is prepared. Some of it comes from, you know, servers scraping leftover food off of plates. Some of it is spoilage. You know, there's a number of things that lead people to throw food away.
Yeah.
We know that a huge amount of food wasted in the U.S. comes from people not really being able to understand sell-by dates and tossing away dairy products and that sort of thing well before it's actually gone bad.
Is there a better way to connect people who need food with restaurants that have worthwhile leftovers?
Yeah, there certainly is. I mean, here in Asheville, we have a service called Food Connection. And the way that it works is really very interesting. The the local restaurant signs up, they get approved, and if they have, you know, about 18 to 20 portions or more of food left over at the end of the night, they send a text message to the people at Food Connection, and Food Connection actually arranges for a local taxi to come and pick up that food and deliver it to the shelters.
Oh, wow. All right, so it's roughly 18 to 20 portions, you said, and that's food that's already been prepared, for example?
Been prepared, but, you know, obviously not touched by anyone, in the restaurant.
Jeez. All right, so you mentioned before your experience as a chef, where you're pulling your hair out sometimes, thinking, my goodness, this steak and potatoes, or this pasta dish I made, fish just gone. No, no use.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a tough balancing act when you work in the restaurant business. You obviously don't want to run out of food too early. You definitely don't want to let a lot of food go to waste. But a lot of times restaurants err on the side of, you know, obviously being able to feed everybody, and do have, you know, potatoes or something like that left over at the end of the night. And, of course, I think it bothers everybody in the food industry to throw food away, especially since they, you know, are often very ecologically minded people, and no one likes to throw food away at all when there's so many people out there hungry.
Thanks, Mackenzie. Mackenzie Lunsford from the Citizen Times in Asheville, North Carolina. 21 minutes after the hour on this weekend. Have you tried everything to relieve the pain of your aching back? If surgery and pills haven't worked, you might consider a new approach being tested by some doctors. Here's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
It's the number one cause of chronic pain, back pain. Instead of focusing on surgery and drugs, health experts say we should be trying something called functional restoration. Here with the story is Laura Landreau of the Wall Street Journal. Laura, why is back pain such a big problem in this country?
Well, you know, it literally can happen to like 90% of Americans at some point in their lives. Something happens, you do something, it may be a structural issue, you may have, you know, gotten up the wrong way, but for some people, it becomes chronic and really disabling, and in many cases, they'll go out and they'll have spinal surgeries or they'll start on prescription narcotics, and it becomes a slippery slope pretty soon. You have all these medical treatments, and yet you're not getting relief. So there is more focus on what do we do for those people for whom this is really a chronic pain issue.
Why is surgery not such a great idea?
Well, I think surgery obviously has its place. Surgery is amazing, and it can fix things. You can fix discs, and you can fix spinal stenosis. There's a lot of amazing surgery that goes on out there, but it doesn't always work for people. And sometimes the problem can't be fixed by surgery. It isn't something that there's an obvious surgical fix for. Things like sciatica, you know, where the nerves are involved, or where you're not quite sure what's the problem. Often people go through MRIs and other tests, and they don't ever get a firm diagnosis. So you're living with this pain. You don't know what it's caused by. They're telling you they can't do surgery, or you've had surgery and it doesn't work.
Okay, what is functional restoration? What's that all about?
It literally is what it says, restoring your ability to function. So you may not ever get rid of pain. You may always have it in your life at some point, but there are things you can do both physically in terms of exercise, physical therapy, rest, relaxation techniques, and then there's also the kind of behavioral psychological counseling to help you cope, help you manage the pain, help you deal with flare-ups and sort of get a different, it's almost like an attitude adjustment about pain.
Is it a case where years ago people would say rest is a good thing, now they're saying get up and move?
Yes, but what's important is to move in the right way. And in the functional restoration program that we looked at Dartmouth Hitchcock Medical Center up in Lebanon, New Hampshire, which is affiliated in different ways with Dartmouth College, you have a program that looks at the individual. Let's look at your history. What kind of medical treatments have you had? What kind of surgeries have you had? What is your diagnosis? And what's your physical state? And once you kind of go through that, then they ask, what are your goals? What do you want to be able to do? I want to be able to lift my grandchild. I want to be able to work in the office and move things around. I want to be able to go back to sports and skiing. So you take a goal, and then you say, what can you do to reach that goal, both with physical exercise and movement and kind of learning how to bend the right way. Like, don't bend down that way, that's going to hurt your back. But if you bend this way, you know, you've often heard, you know, the right way to lift things up is to, you know, squat on your knees as opposed to bending and lifting. So they kind of ingrain people with exercise and physical regimens that help them with their specific issue. And then talk to them about, how do I cope with this? When pain comes at me, what do I do to sort of, you know, deal with it and realize that it's not going to own me.
What's the danger of taking medications when you're talking about pain?
Well, I mean, everybody knows that there's a narcotic opioid addiction problem in this country. I think it's one of the leading killers of, you know, middle-aged and white Americans. I think the CDC recently came out with that. It's addictive. Often they don't really work. You keep building up your tolerance to them. They have all kinds of side effects. And pretty soon you can't stop taking them and, you know, all kinds of terrible things happen.
Do exercises work, or do you have to be very careful to do the right kind of exercises?
Well, I think exercise is always very important, but you do have to be careful. I think it's important to talk to an expert, have a physical therapist talk to you about different exercises that work for you.
What about yoga?
I think yoga is one of those things that people are incorporating into just about everything. There are great movements in yoga, but, you know, like everything, if you've got pain and if you've got specific problems, you want to make sure that whatever you're doing, it isn't going to exacerbate it. So I think a lot of these exercise programs will, at Dartmouth-Hitchcock, they have some yoga, they have Tai Chi, they have reflexology, they have all different kinds of things that are incorporated from these different disciplines of exercise. What's right for you? What's right for your specific back pain?
This weekend's Jennifer Koshenka with Wall Street Journal health writer Laura Landreau. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend.
You don't have to be a retail giant or government agency to be the victim of a costly data breach. If you run a website and collect customer data, your small to mid-sized business is just as likely to be targeted by hackers. The Barracuda Web Application Firewall provides cost-effective instant security against automated and targeted attacks, making this WAF a must-have for your SMB. Reclaim your network. Try a Barracuda Web App Firewall risk-free at barracuda.com/WAF.
Well, here's something to watch in the coming weeks in college football. Will junior quarterback Jared Goff of Cal declare for the NFL and forego his senior season with the Golden Bears? SB Nation says he could go as high as the sixth pick in the first round, saying he's mentally ready for the pros, even if the physical tools have not fully developed. If he does, chances are he'll be ready financially, thanks to a course he's taking called Personal Finance and Brand Management in Professional Sports, a custom-designed course taught by Stephen Etter, one of the founding partners of Grey Rock Capital Group. Here's New York Times reporter Karen Kraus. Karen, take us through it.
I found out about this story from the swimmer Misty Franklin, who was a sophomore at Cal last year and was in the process of giving up her amateur eligibility in swimming and turning pro, and was just faced with all of these overwhelming decisions. How do I hire an agent? How can I choose the right agent? How do I choose an accountant? What do I look for in a financial advisor? And she was told about this course that was an independent study course that is taught in the School of Business that is tailor-made for student athletes, where it teaches them about financial management and brand management.
Is the course different from, say, Economics 101?
I think so, because first off, it's tailor-made for the needs of the student athlete taking it. For example, the course that Missy Franklin got from Stephen Etter, the professor, is different from what Jared is getting, because he has some a person who's looking to see whether he's considering turning pro after his junior year. He has a whole different set of questions and a different set of issues that Missy, as a person in an individual sport, turning pro would have.
Yeah.
So I also think that the language is, the lingo is probably even different, because anyone taking Econ 101 will be a business major. This is sort of personal management or financial management for dummies, if you will, although I'm not suggesting at all that Jared and Misty are dummies. They're actually quite sharp and quite smart. But I do think it's tailor-made for the student-athlete who is facing some really unique sets of circumstances.
We're speaking with Karen Krause, sports writer at the New York Times. She's got a great piece entitled Before Student Athletes Earn a Penny, A Course in How to Manage Millions. It's about a specialized course at the University of California. I thought interesting, too, in your story, you talk about Jared Goff's father, who basically said, man, I wish I had had this.
Right. So Jared Goff's father, Jerry, he was drafted by Seattle in the third round after his senior season at Cal. And this was in 1986. And he said, I received a call from a Seattle Mariner representative saying, congratulations, we've drafted you. How much is it going to cost for us to sign you? So imagine he's 22 years old. He has no way of really knowing what his worth is on the market. So he just blurted out a number that came to mind because at the time he was eyeing his prized possession, the thing he most wanted in this world if he had the money to afford it, was a Jeep Laredo, which was a tricked-up Cherokee.
Good story. Settled for that. New York Times reporter Karen Krause. Heading into this weekend, by the way, the younger Mr. Goff had thrown 32 touchdowns and 13 picks, rolling up 3,700 yards. It's 21 minutes before the hour. By the way, to hear a podcast of our weekday program, please visit our website, thismorningwithgordondeal.com. You can also check out places like SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Don't forget to leave a review also. Will you be applying for a loan sometime in the next 3 to 6 months? If so, time to start cleaning up your credit score. A few weeks of newfound discipline may not totally reverse past mistakes, but new habits can lead to improvements. Here's personal finance writer Janelle Marte at The Washington Post. Janelle, give us guidance.
So a lot of people are concerned, they're kind of nervous when it comes to credit cards because they're worried about getting in over their heads and ruining their credit. But the truth is that you can use your credit card and use it wisely to build up your credit score.
Okay. Like what? Going to your coffee shop and put your $4 or $5 latte on there and then quickly pay it off, like things like that?
So a couple of things. So the first step is that you want to make sure that you pay your bills on time, and that's every month you want to pay on time. And the reason for that is that your payment history accounts for 35% of your FICO score. And, you know, that's the credit card, the credit score that's used by the majority of lenders. So if you use your card and make sure that you pay the bill on time every month, it will go a long way to boosting your credit score. So that's the first thing. The next thing, you mentioned paying off your card right away. The next step is to keep your balance low. So this gets a little complicated. You know, ideally, you want to keep your balance low by paying your card off completely every month, because card lenders and, you know, the people who create credit scores, they like to see that you're being responsible with your credit. But it's not as simple as paying your card off once a month. So first of all, you want to keep your balance low on every card, not just on your credit overall, because there's a couple of measures, right? Let's say you have $10,000 that you can use on your credit cards overall. They want to see that you're using, you know, less than 10%, maximum less than 30% of that. But then it applies to every single card. So if you aren't able to pay off your balance completely, you want to try and look into maybe you should transfer some of the balance on one card over to another just so that it's low on every card.
So if you are trying to bump up your credit score, then how soon might these particular techniques make a difference so you see your score go up?
So there's no magic timeline, and it's also hard to know exactly how much this will help any one person, because it will depend on, you know, where you're coming from and what your habits were like before you made these changes. But generally speaking, in the next 3 to 6 months, you might see a change in your credit score.
We're speaking with Janelle Marte, personal finance writer at The Washington Post, about the right way to use your credit cards if you need to boost your credit score soon. All right, what else should we consider?
So one other thing that's a little bit more complicated with keeping your balance low is that often the balance that gets reported to the credit bureaus that is then used in factoring your credit score is the last statement balance. So basically, what is the balance due at the end of the statement cycle? However, if you pay that bill off in full, it might still count against you as showing that you have a high utilization of your credit card.
Thanks, Janelle. Janelle Marte, personal finance writer at The Washington Post. 13 minutes before the hour on This Weekend. Glad you're with us. If you've used the Waze app, W-A-Z-E, to navigate traffic jams, you've probably have been impressed by its reliability to reroute you. But not everybody loves how the vehicles find different roads to speed you along, especially if your local neighborhood is where the cars are being sent. More from Wall Street Journal reporter Joe Flint, who sampled what's happening in parts of suburban Los Angeles. Joe, start by explaining Waze a little more.
Waze is an app that allows commuters to find shortcuts to avoid really busy boulevards or freeways. And it's very handy and it can be very helpful. But one of the unintended consequences of it, it seems, is that it can often overload smaller streets with traffic that the residents certainly are not accustomed to, and there's some debate about whether the streets themselves were ever built to handle such heavy loads.
Interesting. All right, so what are some of these neighborhoods? Do we know, would us non-Los Angelians know the names?
Well, the neighborhood my story focused on was in Sherman Oaks, but I've talked to enough people and sort of seen it myself that it's a universal issue in Los Angeles. I've gotten emails since the story ran from people who live in Hancock Park and Silver Lake and Santa Monica, but I focused on this neighborhood in Sherman Oaks I had learned of, where in the mornings, especially from about 7 to 9, 9:30, it's a never-ending trail of cars. It almost looks like a funeral procession when it's still dark out and all the lights are on. And this road in Sherman Oaks, Cody Road, is basically a little cut-through street or shortcut for people who are trying to avoid the 405 freeway or Sepulveda Boulevard to make their way down into Los Angeles, Beverly Hills, West L.A. And people say, well, Waze is supposed to direct people away from streets that are congested, so why isn't that happening here? And it's not so much the congestion on the streets. I mean, the cars endure this for a few minutes and go on their way. It's the residents having to put up with this steady stream of cars for hours on end that are going crazy from all this.
Right. We're speaking with Joe Flint at the Wall Street Journal. His piece is entitled, "In L.A., One Way to Beat Traffic Runs into Backlash." And that's, you got the popular Waze app that is sending drivers onto these side streets. It's got residents angry. Yeah, it was the one woman you talked to said she's, you know, can hear Beyonce blaring at 7 o'clock, and while Beyonce is lovely, she doesn't necessarily want to hear it at that hour.
I've been up there twice when I was reporting this story early in the morning, and we also did a video with it, and I can vouch for the heavy traffic and, yes, the occasional cell phone conversations, the exhaust fumes, everything there. It really isn't a pleasant experience. Of course, these are public streets, and anyone can drive on them, obviously. So the issue then becomes, what do residents do? And in Los Angeles, we're seeing more and more neighborhoods that have limitations on when you can turn on to them. There's more speed bumps to try to slow people down. So the ultimate solution for these folks may be to try to get some rules change where it's a local street between the hours of 7 and 10 a.m. and in the evening rush. But the problem there, I guess, is it just seems like so their answer to all this is to further inconvenience their lives. And you know, some people even can't get out of their driveways in the morning because the traffic is so heavy and they're trying to back their cars out.
Could you imagine? Thanks, Joe. Wall Street Journal reporter Joe Flint in L.A. 6 minutes now before the hour on This Weekend. It's been almost a year since two New York City police officers were shot to death as they sat in their patrol car in Brooklyn. Their murders greatly impacted a 7-year-old boy named Zachary Becerra, who wanted to do something to show his support for cops. After brainstorming with his mother, NBC News says they decided to make thank you cards, but with one twist. Zachary wanted the cards to have a superhero theme. The boy's mother thought they'd take the cards to just their local precinct, but Zachary had bigger plans. He wanted to take the cards to every precinct in New York City, to all of the NYPD's 34,000-something officers. When Zachary enters precincts these days, he's often welcomed with gifts and standing ovations. He looks at the officers the way young boys look at sports stars or entertainers. They are his heroes. As he makes his visits, by the way, he's getting well-known among the cops. Having that reputation could work in his favor in the future, since he one day wants to be a New York City police officer. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend.